to the material laws, and he thus receives the fruits of his actions. Does your lordship, like an ordinary human being, exist within this material world in a body produced by the material modes? Do you enjoy or suffer the good or bad results of actions under the influence of time, past work, and so forth? Or, on the contrary, are you present here only as a neutral witness who is self-sufficient, free from all material desires, and always full of spiritual potency? We certainly cannot understand your actual position. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he descends into this material world for two purposes, namely, paritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha dushkritam, to relieve the devotees and kill demons or non-devotees. These two kinds of actions are the same for the absolute truth. When the Lord comes to punish the demons, he bestows his favor upon them. And similarly, when he delivers his devotees, he gives them relief. He also bestows his favor. Thus the Lord bestows his favor equally upon conditioned souls. When a conditioned soul gives relief to others, he acts piously. And when he gives trouble to others, he acts impiously. But the Lord is neither pious nor impious. He is always full in his spiritual potency, by which he shows equal mercy to the punishable and the protectable. The Lord is apapaviddham. He is never contaminated by reactions of so-called sinful activities. When Krishna was present on this earth, he killed many inimical non-devotees, but they all received sarupya. In other words, they returned to their original spiritual bodies. One who does not know the Lord's position says that God is unkind to him but merciful to others. Actually, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 29, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyostina priyaha. Quote, I am equal to everyone. No one is my enemy and no one is my friend. End quote. But he also says, Ye vajanti tu mam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. Quote, if one becomes my devotee and fully surrenders unto me, I give him special attention. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya Chaksur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri chaitanya mano bhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale. Swayam rupa kadamahyam dadati svapadantikam. Vancha kalpataru bhyascha kripa sindhu bhya evacha. Patitanam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha. Jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda. Shri advaita gadadhar shivasadi gora bhakta vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yesterday, in the discussion, there was a question whether to understand spiritual phenomena, or in general the realities within spiritual life, by a process of trial and error. So sharing with Justin that there's a joke. A man said that I lived my life according mostly on the basis of trial and error. I made so many errors that they all ended up in trials. That's not our process. Trial and error leaves a lot of room for doubt and incomplete understanding, especially in the case of the personality of Godhead, or for the matter anything spiritual, because it is not within the purview or jurisdiction of our mental capacity or our intellectual capacity, however intelligent a person might be, there is always someone more intelligent. There were two men traveling on a plane. One was a very ordinary villager, ordinary man, and the other was Albert Einstein. It was not factual, it was made up stuff, but you get the idea. So Einstein, especially when one has a lot of knowledge, there is a thing that goes along with that knowledge, and that is pride, garva. That's why in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes a different kind of knowledge. That one who is benefited by proper spiritual knowledge, that person becomes humble. It's called Vidya Vinaya Sampanne, gentleness. Good proper knowledge or true spiritual knowledge should make a person humble and gentle. In the absence of that, that knowledge can make a person arrogant. So when they were sitting next to each other, Einstein asked the guy sitting next to him, "Hey, we have a long flight. How about we do a little exchange by which we can spend our time? How about this? How about a challenge?" He said, "I'll ask you any question. If you don't know the answer to it, you give me $5. And you can ask me any question, and if I don't know the answer, I'll give you $500. Fair enough?" So this man said, "Sure, why not? It's a long flight, what's the problem?" So Einstein asked his neighbor, "Do you know what is the theory of relativity?" So this person drew a blank, took out $5 from his pocket, and gave it to Einstein. Now Einstein said, "Your turn." So this simple man said, "What goes up a hill with three legs and comes down with four?" So Einstein thought about it. It's like, wow. Because no one had, you know, he thought it would ask something in physics or something. So he thought about it. He said, "I'll need some time." So yeah, take your time. So about an hour passed, and then Einstein turned to him and said, "Here's $500. So the man put it in his pocket. Then Einstein said, "My turn." "Yes. So what is it that goes up the hill with three legs and comes down with four?" So this man, after a few moments, took out $5 from his pocket and gave it to Einstein. Because there's nothing like that. So just useless argument, going back and forth on topics that are not within the ability of our mind and intelligence, is a waste of time. Here the demigods, they're expressing something that's very interesting. So yesterday they started their verse with Duravabodha, which means very difficult to understand. And today they're, because Krishna is difficult to understand, they're asking these questions. The questions are very simple. When you appear within this material universe, do you also take a material form? Are you also influenced by the modes of nature, karmic reactions, etc.? Or do you still maintain your neutrality, your spiritual identity, although you're within the material realm, but you're not touched by matter? There are different ways of understanding it. One is that they're really asking. Another is, it's a glorification. It's a glorification that how can the Lord be affected by material modes of nature? It's a glorification. So they're asking. Because it is so bewildering when you see the activities of the Lord. So here are some activities that seem very ordinary and almost karmic. Especially the pastimes of Lord Krishna or Lord Ramachandra. Where Lord Narsingadeva appeared, I think they didn't have much doubt. Is this body material? Are you the all-powerful? Because he ripped apart Hiranyakashipu and demonstrated it. But here are some things, for example, this is only a small list. I'm sure there's a long list if you sit down and really think about everything. Lord Ramachandra, when Sita Devi was abducted by Ravana, first of all, the fact that when Sita Devi told Lord Ramachandra, I want that deer, and the deer was running away, Lord Rama pursued the deer. And Sita got abducted. So it was like he didn't know what was happening. It's like an ordinary human being. And then when Sita was abducted, it is described that Lord Ramachandra was crying piteously. He was wailing like an ordinary husband would wail at the loss of his wife or something. And it went to such a degree that he would stop by the creepers and ask every leaf of the creepers, did you see my wife? Did you see my wife? He would ask the birds, he would ask the bees, have you seen Sita? Have you seen Sita? It's very ordinary human-like. And then, I'm just going through quickly, and then when he found out that Sita Devi is in Lanka, and they come up to this place called Rameshwaram, from where they have to cross the ocean to go to Lanka, it's not impossible for Lord Ramachandra to build, just transport himself from one place to another. But he engaged all the bears and monkeys and said, well, how can we go there without a bridge? And so they all constructed a bridge, and he waited for weeks before the bridge got built. Etc. Things like that. And when Sita Devi came back, he wanted to test her purity. So he asked her to walk through fire. Not that he didn't know, but it's described that he did ask her to do something like that. And then one night when he was in disguise, going around Ayodhya, checking out how people think about him, he heard a washerman and his wife fighting. And the washerman said, to his wife, you have spent the day or night at someone else's house. I don't know if you're pure enough. How can I take you back? I'm not like that Ramachandra who takes back a woman who's not lived with him for a long time. And Lord Ramachandra then sent Sita away to the forest while she was pregnant with the twins. So these seem very cruel or odd, that why is Lord Ramachandra affected by these things? Then in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, stealing butter from people's houses. Every day, that was his main challenge, that he would like to steal butter from the most challenging household. And all the gopis would intentionally make it more and more challenging for Krishna to come and steal butter. So they would sit there and plot whose house they should go and steal butter today. Then when he became a little older, the fact that he was becoming older, that itself is bewildering. He appeared as a baby, then he seemed to be growing up. And when he was grown up, he stole the garments of the young gopis. Now, no mother will want to teach her child any of these things, right? Even if the child steals a pencil from someone else, the mother would immediately chastise. No stealing. This is very bad. And the child cannot say, Krishna also stole butter. At least in India, if a child says, Krishna stole butter, the mother would whack him. Shut up. What do you mean? But Krishna stole the garments of the girls. And, he would tease them. It would bother them every day. And then when he grew up a little bit more, he left Vrindavan with a promise that he will come back, but he never fulfilled his promise according to the gopis. So a person, this is described that a man is only good enough as his word. And Krishna says, I will come back. He never came. Then when the fast forward Mahabharata war was to take place, Krishna devised so many devious plans to protect the Pandavas. Jayadratha had to be killed. Jayadratha had to be killed. So Krishna cast his Sudarshan Chakra and made it appear like night, so that Jayadratha, who was challenged by Arjuna, that if I don't kill him by sunset today, I will enter fire and kill myself. So the Kauravas planned that Jayadratha would be at the far end of their army. And that army had spread across 16 miles. And Arjuna was right in the front, challenging. So where's Jayadratha? They told him he's way at the back. And the first layer of attack was Bhishma, Drona, Karna, the whole gang was there. And Arjuna had to break through to go reach him. And when they knew that they couldn't make it that far, Krishna had cast his Sudarshan Chakra to appear as if it was night time, but the sun had set, and they decided not to fight after the sun was down. And so Jayadratha laughingly came to the front and stood in front of Arjuna and said, ha 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 ha, I would like to see you enter fire, because that's how you promised. And suddenly Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra revealed, or just withdrew, and it was nice bright daylight. It was a trick by Krishna to make it look like sunset, to bring Jayadratha out of his defense and hiding. And everyone was bewildered, shocked. What was going on? You've never seen the sun rise again after it set. So in that moment of shock, Krishna tapped Arjuna on the shoulder and said, now is your moment. Do it. Kill him. When Karna, who was such a formidable enemy, when Karna was fighting, Karna's chariot wheel got stuck in the dirt and it wouldn't move. So he got off his chariot to pull the wheel out. And he was unarmed. According to Kshatriya codes of combat, you should not fight an unarmed person. Or the only way to fight is you give up your arms, and if the person is ready for a wrestle, then you have to wrestle. You have to be equal at all times. The weapons must be equal. If they are using bow and arrow and sword, you can use bow, arrow and sword and fight with weapons. If they don't have weapons, you cannot have weapons. If they are off their chariot, you have to be off the chariot. But Krishna brought Arjuna to Karna and told him, now is your time to kill Karna. So Arjuna protested, he's not fighting. He's unarmed. Krishna says, don't wait. Even your son Abhimanyu was unarmed, and they all ganged up against him. So this is fit punishment. And Krishna made Arjuna kill Karna. Like that. There are a long list of things where Krishna's behavior is always a little, as the Karmis would say, dubious. He manipulated it so many different times, as they say. So then they're asking, do you also enjoy good and bad results from your activities? Do you get karmic reactions? Is your body made of material modes of nature? Because the Bhagavatam describes that when Krishna was driving Arjuna's chariot, his body was perspiring. And the dust that was raised by the hooves of the horses, it had stuck to Krishna's beads of sweat, and his hair was full of that dust, and it made him look very beautiful. And when Bhishma was shooting arrows, Krishna was like a shield for Arjuna, And all these arrows were piercing Krishna's body, and there was blood all over his body. In Ishopanishad, we hear Akaya with Akaya. He doesn't have this body. He doesn't have a material body. Ashnaviram, there are no veins. Apapaviddham, he is untouched by sin. Then how to understand that Krishna had blood dripping? Or he was having beads of sweat, etc. So it's bewildering. Does he have a material body? He does not have a material body. Or when he appears in front of the human beings within this material world, if he is fully spiritual, we cannot see. But at the same time, everyone could see Krishna. Even the ordinary persons, they could see Krishna. Even the demons could see Krishna. We say on one hand that the great yogis who are sitting in meditation for hundreds of years with their senses fully controlled, their mind attracted to Krishna without any deviation, still they are unable to capture Krishna within their mind. Yet the demons can see him face to face and fight with him. So, is he spiritual? Is he not spiritual? Yes. Or we have appeared many times. You don't remember, but I do. And for a person who understands Krishna's appearance and activities, is considered liberated. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvatah. There are many key words in this verse. First, Krishna uses the word janma to mean birth. Of course, we never use the word birth, we use the word appearance. But Krishna says janma, because it seems like he is born. Devaki's womb, she felt the presence of Krishna in her womb. Although Krishna was standing in front of her, he entered her mind. And karma, activities. Krishna is not into karmic activities. They are all called leela. But he says janma and karma. And he says divyam. Divyam means transcendental. Our activities, our birth and activities are hardly transcendental. They're not even anywhere close to transcendence. When we appear, when we are born, we are also crying, and our mother is crying, and a few years later, the parents are crying forever. This is always crying and crying. Krishna brought happiness. Janma, karma, and our activities, no need to mention, right? Divyam. And he says, not only are they transcendental, but one who knows them, tatvataha, in truth, properly. One who understands how to discern my appearances and my activities. Such a person, tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti. Such a person, when he leaves his body, he's so liberated that he will not take birth again activities of this material world. Nacha karma phale spruha. I'm not also influenced by the fruits of the activities. The reason we heard yesterday, Jaya Jagannath Prabhu was explaining. The reason we perform activities, anything, is because we want some outcome. And those outcomes is what we are looking for. Those outcomes give us happiness or distress. We want to avoid distress and we want happiness. That's why we do anything. Krishna is neither looking for happiness nor distress. In fact, happiness and distress in the material sense don't touch him. So there is no reason for him to act in any way. He is called Atma Rama. There is no reason to do anything. Like yesterday we heard, all he has to do is desire. And everything is taken care of automatically. Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Balak Kriyacha. Parasya Shakti, he has all these variegated energies. Vividhaiva, so many varieties of them. Swabhaviki, there is very they're his own. Jnanabala kriyacha. So everything happens according to his desire and all activities manifest. So he has nothing to seek from this material world. There is nothing for him, an outcome that he wants, nothing. The only thing that he wants is to interact with his devotees. Paritranaya sadhunam. And vinashaya chuduskrutam. To kill the persons who are inimical. Now, why does he kill someone and why does he protect another one? It seems dichotomous. It seems polar. On one hand, he wants to kill someone. On the other hand, he wants to protect. And Prabhupada describes in today's purport that both are activities of love for Krishna. Now, that's a little difficult to understand. Not only a little difficult, it's very difficult to understand. Because our experience is that we live in a world of duality. And our duality is friends and enemies, anger and love, like that, or hatred, love and hatred, etc. So we always live in this world of duality. And Krishna's activities also seem as if they are within this duality. When Krishna becomes angry at the demons, we say, yeah, yeah, that's right. And he's loving with the devotees, you say, yeah, yeah, that's really cool. I would also feel like that. But we can't say, I would also, we don't know what Krishna feels. We don't know how Krishna interacts. What is happening within Krishna is very difficult to decipher. When we are in distress, we look at him, he's smiling. When we are happy, we look at him, he's smiling. He's always smiling. And that smile is described by the acharyas that it is the most enigmatic smile that no one can ever decipher what it means. You can never tell. Because he is very grave. As grave, we'd never know what Krishna is thinking. Unless our acharyas say, this is what is happening at that moment. Sometimes Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur will say, this is what Krishna was thinking. Rukmini was pointing fingers at Krishna. She was pointing a finger. You like this. That's how we know. Otherwise, we have no clue. So Krishna's activities of killing a demon or showing affection for a devotee, both are considered his mercy. Now the only thing that is, I guess, different is how these persons approach the Lord. Ye yatha mam prapadyate. Krishna is the person who interacts according to the disposition of the heart of the person or persons approaching him. When one approaches Krishna with love, they receive love. When one approaches Krishna for something material, they receive something material. Although within that is his mercy in a very unique sort of way. And those who approach him with animosity, they experience that animosity. Just like in this world. When we give violence, we get violence. We give happiness, we receive happiness. We give spite, we receive spite. You give kindness, you receive kindness. Why? Because all of these karmic laws are originating from Krishna. So that's how Krishna reciprocates. Let me say something. When it's described in the 10th canto, when Krishna entered the wrestling arena where Kamsa was sitting, there's a beautiful verse that as he entered, he and Balaram, they entered with the bleeding tusks of Kuvalaya Pida on their shoulders. And Chanura and Mushtika and other wrestlers were waiting to have this wrestling match with Krishna and Balaram. Different people saw Krishna differently. It's described that the impersonalists They saw Brahman. The yogis saw Paramatma. The elderly persons from Vrindavan, they saw their little boy Krishna as if he was their son. The other boys, they saw, hey, our friend is here. The gopis, our hero is here. He's going to impress us with his fighting and increase our conjugal feelings towards him. Chanura and Mushtika and Kamsa, they saw death personified. Same person, saw in different ways. Depends on the disposition of the heart towards Krishna. So some people come and they see a statue, a stone. But because the disposition of the heart is such. Some people see Krishna. Some people see that as a symbol, right? That's the impersonalist idea, that it is easier to fix the mind if there is form. So there is some form here. Because Krishna says, klesho adhikarastesham avyakta asakta chetasam. So they twist that verse into meaning that yes, the form of Krishna is material. It helps in fixing the mind. Otherwise, to fix the mind on something abstract like Brahman is very difficult. But actually that is higher stage. That is what they say. But even if they are at a higher stage, they cannot fix their mind, even on Brahman. It's not easy. Avyakta hi gatir dukham. When Krishna says certain words, we should hear it carefully. Avyakta hi gatir dukham. That the goal for those who are attracted by the abstract impersonal feature is full of misery, dukham. When Krishna says this material world is dukhalayam ashashvatam, the materialists will tell us, no, go out and find out that this world is sukhalayam shashvatam. It is not. Dukhalayam means house of misery. And ashashvatam means temporary. So when things are temporary, one should not try to make things permanent. It won't stay. And dukhalayam. Why dukkha? Because it is temporary. It is material. Something material cannot give happiness. Whatever it is, it cannot give happiness. Unless there is something spiritual behind it. Like this book is made of material elements. There's wood pulp, ink, glue, etc. But because it is Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives us eternal benefit and has great benefit. Like that. There has to be something spiritual behind material. Then there is meaning. Just as this body, if it is not activated by the soul within it, this body is useless. It has to be burnt, buried immediately. Otherwise it decays. The smell, it rots. So here he says, when Krishna is present on this earth, he killed many inimical non-devotees, but they all received sarupya. So Krishna's act of killing a demon and giving association or protecting the devotee, both are acts of great mercy. And in that sense, both the receivers are benefiting greatly. On Janmashtami night, I was sharing this verse of Uddhava about how wonderful is Krishna, that although he killed Putana, or Putana had come to kill him, he gave her the position of a mother in the spiritual realm. In the next verse, he says, the non-devotees are better than the devotees because they get to see Krishna. face to face at the time of their death. So it's described that it's not that the non-devotees are better. It is Uddhava's way of speaking in separation, that at least the non-devotees get to see Krishna face to face when they are dying, especially these ones that Krishna comes to kill. But we as devotees, we always hope, oh, somehow I can remember Krishna, somehow Krishna will come to deliver me. And especially in Uddhava's case, Krishna had departed from the world without Uddhava being present in that place. Or for that matter, one of the materialistic activities is that bewilders the mind is how Krishna departed from this world. Someone shot an arrow that pierced his foot, etc. And was like, oh, really? His material body? As described, it is to bewilder the impersonalists. Krishna manifests such a way in by which he leaves this world. So the demigods, they're confused. Are you fully spiritual? At any point in time, is there something material within you? Do you act in a material sort of way? Are you influenced by the modes of nature? Or are you always neutral or a neutral witness? The answer is yes, always a neutral witness. Although moving around within the material realm, he's untouched even a little bit by anything material. And is described by Queen Kunti that he's just like an actor. Nato natya dharo yatha. He puts on all these forms or disguises and appears like one of us, but he's not one of us. And one cannot be recognized just as an actor cannot be recognized in his disguise. Or Bhishma Deva says, Gudhas charati vrishnishu. You're moving among the vrishnis in a very secret sort of way. The secret is, he seems like one of us. Seems very human-like, behaves human-like. And that is the bewildering part about God. The other aspect of God, the godhood side, the awe and reverence side, the opulence side, the Aishwarya side, is in one sense understandable because the distinction is so vast that there is this personality sitting up in heaven or in the kingdom of God deciding who goes where. He is the one who gives everyone whatever they are looking for. Oh God, give us our daily bread, Prabhupada would say like that. Then it is very clear, this is God, he's sitting somewhere way up there. But what to speak about God when he's interacting and moving around with people? It's very difficult. And that's what Krishna does. He appears within this material world and he interacts and he moves around, conducts all these pastimes that look very ordinary. And then we have Krishna's representative, the spiritual master. Also, very difficult to understand how a jiva can be empowered in such a way to deliver the living entity from this material world. And he also looks ordinary, body will age, sometimes may forget something or seemingly make mistakes, etc. Wonder, whoa, what's going on? These are difficult topics. And in general, subtle topics are more difficult than gross topics. Anything subtle is more difficult to understand. But we begin from even the gross we cannot understand. That's where we begin. We don't understand how gross phenomena work. We have to learn physics and all of that to get a sense of how it's working. But once things start becoming more subtle, it's difficult to understand, like light. It's difficult because it moves in waves. Or you start moving towards the atomic level, then everything is even more difficult, because till today there is enough debate about whether the electron is, you know, spins and moves as packets of energy or whatever. Don't need to get into it because I don't know. Now, there's still so much debate. That's on the subtler side. Then you go to even subtler realms. When the mind is involved, or the intelligence, what to speak of the soul? So access to subtle knowledge is not through logic. Access to subtle knowledge is through purity. When the heart becomes pure, subtle knowledge becomes clearer. Subtler things become clearer. Therefore, we see that the ones who have true knowledge, they are on the track of a pure life. And those who are after trying to grapple with physical or subtle phenomena, without a pure heart, cannot understand. They don't have access. A pure heart gives the access to Krishna's mercy. Prasad lesha anugrahita evahi. Even a little of Krishna's mercy is enough to understand certain things. Janati tattvam. One understands Krishna in reality, in truth, by Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's mercy only descends into a pure heart. Without a pure heart, it is not possible, how much ever one will try. And the pure heart begins with Shamodamas. Shama means control of the mind, and Dhamma means control of the senses. So when mind and senses are controlled, that's the pathway for purifying the heart. And we control our senses and mind by chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. That's what Cheto Darpana Margin is. It's our pathway to a purified heart, so we can access and understand Krishna in reality. Not some sentimental sort of way, or inaccurate sort of way. If we don't understand how Krishna interacts, who we are, what is our relationship with Krishna, etc., then we wouldn't get the full joy of serving Krishna. We wouldn't even get the enthusiasm to continue our services to Krishna, unless we understand this is how Krishna works, this is who Krishna is. Okay, any questions or comments, any discussion? Yeah, Prahlad?
How come even people like Krishna and Drona, even though they were like devotees up to some extent, how come he also did by unfair means to kill them?
How come when Bhishma and Drona are also devotees, Krishna had to resort to unfair means to kill them? Bhishma was not killed by unfair means. Drona was so formidable that without being eliminated, the Kaurava army could not be defeated. Now, Krishna wanted to make sure that Yudhishthira and his brothers are kings, because dharma sansthapanarthaya. And externally speaking, both Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya, although they knew who Krishna was, they were on the side of the Kauravas. They made a choice to stay that side because they felt obliged. Obliged that the Kaurava king has taken care of us. How can we renege his side? In the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada describes, because they were financially maintained by the Kaurava family. In the Mahabharata, there's a phrase, you heard this, Arthasya Purushodata. Artha means money. Arthasya Purushodata, that whoever is maintaining me financially, I'm obliged to that person. It's a sense of duty. Right, yeah. So they were on that side. And from a rasa side, we hear that Bhishma, they wanted to interact with Krishna in the chivalrous rasa. There's another angle that it doesn't matter who one is, whether one may be Bhishma Dev, one may be Dronacharya, it doesn't matter. When a woman was being violated, and that too unfairly, they did not say anything. So Krishna, by one act, can manifest and give us teachings across multiple dimensions. Because Bhishma Deva should have stood up to say, this is wrong, you must stop this. He had that authority, but he didn't express it strongly enough. So then there are reactions like that. Different lessons from their being on that side. Okay, any others? Yes, Jitendra Prabhu. Time to go.
One thing I noticed recently is reading that what they call intuition, we call Paramatma. Uh-huh. Did you want to elaborate on that? They're taking credit for a lot of their discoveries and stuff, but it's already there.
Intuition is that inner voice that most people don't know. In fact, we also don't know. But we say it is Paramatma. The inner voice, Paramatma, will prompt when we are trying to understand Him and serve Him. Otherwise, the prompt of Paramatma works very differently. He prompts through the mind. That's why devotees say, I don't know if it is my mind or is it Paramatma. And we usually say, it's the mind, mostly. Unless it is very clear and distinct. So yeah, there's a whole idea of intuition that removes the presence of Paramatma. Another way people remove the presence of Paramatma is they say that animals and insects are governed by instinct. Like if there is some sugar, an ant will come towards that sugar because it has instinct. And Prabhupada discusses it's not instinct, it's Paramatma guiding. Like that. Yeah, ants will find it. Okay, anything else? Okay. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavatam ki jai. I should have spent more time on ye bhajanti tumam bhakti.
Jesus, our Lord.